Hello, everyone, and welcome to Players Endeavors, episode 3, our fourth episode.
I think they got the joke after 1 or 0.
They probably got the joke at 0 since we told them the joke.
Yeah, you seem really enamored with the fact that you...
I'm not enamored with it, it's just we have trouble remembering now which number it is.
That's true, this is going to end up biting us.
We're going to end up skipping an episode and be on.
That'll be the lost episode that we will then find. Because it's the
You mean the negative one episode.
The negative one episode that's on your computer somewhere. That we will find, still. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm Blake.
And I'm Dustin.
And welcome to our podcast. I think I said the name already.
You did.
Good.
And the episode.
Short-term memory. I said this is the indie game Phil Fish edition.
You didn't.
This is the indie game Phil Fish edition.
That's a mouthful.
Special edition. This is our annual exclusive.
Annual exclusive on Phil Fish. Some indie developer who's decided to do something crazy.
Probably do something weekly on that. I mean, that's
true, but this is kind of a big deal.
This deserves our full attention.
Full episode.
5 full episodes. This is going to be the start of our new Phil Fish arc.
Pod. I don't want to hear that, actually. I think 1 will be enough.
What does Fez say about the dentist?
What?
That's the next episode you'll have to find out.
Oh, okay. I'm excited now, too.
Yeah, me too, especially since I've only played, a couple minutes of Fez.
Good. Ruin your credibility.
But I have watched Indie Games the movie.
Clearly, you know everything about Fez, then.
I really don't like that movie. So, let's get into things. Now that we've announced our main topic, we're not even making you guess this week. We're gonna start with the classic section of what we've been playing.
You know you love it.
You gotta have it. It's like Cold Stone. You like it, you love it, you gotta have it.
Is that really their slogan?
No, that's their sizes.
Oh. Did I never go to Cold Stone?
We went the other,
months ago.
We went July 4th.
Yeah.
Because Matt really wanted ice cream, so we waited.
Who's Matt?
Matt's our friend that I mentioned on the last week's podcast, or 2 weeks ago. I mentioned him on almost every podcast. And he's our friend who programs, and...
The air quotes don't transfer through the mic.
He really wanted ice cream on July 4th, and so we found a Cold Stone attached to a Tim Hortons.
They're owned by the same parent company.
Yeah. I didn't know that, but I figured. And so it wasn't that long of a line. It was 6 people ahead of us, and it took an hour for us to get our ice cream.
There was one person working there.
Yeah. There was only one person working. And I mean, she did have to do a lot of work, but...
Also, there was the drive-thru.
Yeah. So that was...
July 4th.
But no one probably wants to hear about our July 4th Cold Stone stories.
You started talking. I just tone you out. I assume they skip ahead as well.
We should put little,
Markers?
Markers in, so they can...
Meaningless banter ends here.
Yeah, so...
Meaningless banter about Phil Fish ends here.
Dustin, what have you been playing this last week? I'm very curious.
Oh, really? I think the big thing I've been playing is Resident Evil 6.
RE6. Biohazard. They call it a Nippon.
You done? Or
done.
Can I talk now?
Yeah, you can talk.
Alright, cool. Thanks, man. But yeah, Resident Evil 6 I got as a gift for my birthday from Matt, oddly enough. So it was a nice gift. I don't know what's funny about that. But
because Matt's going to be our mascot.
Use his face as our photo, maybe. But I've been playing through Resident Evil 6. I've only started Leon's story. It's broken into different character stories this time. And it's really... I think it's pretty good so far. I had heard a lot of mixed reviews about it when I was looking at it when it came out. I didn't buy it when it came out. I didn't have any money at the time. But I don't know. I got a lot of really poor reviews. I should look and see what those reviews were saying was bad, because honestly, I haven't seen a lot of problems with it. It's a graphical step above Resident Evil 5. I feel like the controls, even though they are a departure from the standard Resident Evil formula of you have to stand still to shoot.
Revelations departed from that,
though. Revelations did, you're right. But that was kind of a filler game. I don't know. I don't know how many people played it that are core Resident Evil fans.
Well, now probably a lot.
Well, yeah, now that it was now that it's been released across every platform, I'm sure that the base has grown. But I think that that departure is it works. Like, you can't run or anything with your weapon out. You really just move slightly a little bit so you can dodge just a little bit more effectively. I don't think the game has scared me yet, but it's definitely got a very good, at least Leon's story has a very good, like, disconcerting feel to it that I've been very impressed by. The controls are really tight. They have some of the most beautiful, like, bullet destruction I've ever seen in terms of hitting targets. It's really graphically disturbing, but I don't know, it's really good. I think it makes Left 4 Dead 2 look a little bad by comparison. Like, they really...
The graphics are really nice.
They do a really good job
with probably, that. You know what happened? They probably patched it, and then...
Could be. I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, I've been enjoying it so far. Like, it's been a good level of challenge. Good, I mean, a reasonable level of tension. The story seems pretty standard Resident Evil so far, but I haven't gotten really far enough to know exactly what's going on. But I'm definitely intrigued, so I'll keep playing it. I'm pretty sure it's a long game, but I'm enjoying it so far. Other than that, what have I been? I don't know if I've been able to play much. I played a little bit more of Spartan Assault once, and boy, I don't know. So my graphics card has been slowly dying over the past couple of weeks, and finally I got tired of it artifacting everything I tried to play. I was trying to play Receiver more, and it started just, like, dying, and I was like, I'm done. So I RMA'd it this week, but that means I can't use my computer, so I haven't been able to play a lot of the games I have, because I was playing through Resident Evil Revelations, but... had to pause that and switch over to the Xbox. Play some Betrayal this week. Betrayal at House on the Hill.
It's a board game.
It's not a digital
analog
game.
Analog.
It's a lot of fun. And I bought Whack-A-Cat Girl by Asmodee. Asmodee Games. Did you say it?
I don't know.
The guys who made... We didn't play test this at all. Or we didn't play test this either. Or any of those games. They have a game about whacking cat girls that looks like lots of fun.
It's essentially like a gag manga anime game.
It's like a deck building, yeah, gag game that it was on sale. And I was like, I have to have this, so I bought it. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we're gonna play that soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, boy, I honestly did not play a lot of games this week. This was a really busy week.
Yeah, it was. I didn't play a lot of games either. I guess
I'm done. So you can go ahead.
No, it was segue. That was such a good segue, and I was building on that segue.
So Blake, what did you play this week?
See, that was... Mine was interrupting you. Such a better segue. This week, Come to think of it, I didn't get to play a lot this week, because it was a really busy week. I was working a lot.
I told you, it was a busy week.
It was a busy week. And, I mean, I think... I think this week I got to play some Saints Row the Third.
You did.
And, because
you wanted me to play it on my graphics card.
I love it. It is a hoot of a game. Say the least. Like, oh my god, I've been having so much fun with it. I got all the DLC for like $11, and
which isn't that good of a deal. Wait for like the $6 sales,
which is currently, I think, going on with the
the Humble Bundle. I believe
it's $6 for all everything I bought. But
Saints Row 1 and Saints Row 2.
No, not Saints Row 1. It's Saints Row 2, and then
it's Dead Island. That's
yeah,
what it is.
Saints Row the Third. And then you can get the full package for like $6. And
then you can add on Riptide for $25 and get the whole thing.
I thought was a little ridiculous, actually.
It's a great deal.
It is a great deal, but...
Dude, Riptide's $40 still.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about buying it. Because I really have wanted to play the Dead Island games. Because I love zombies and I love Left 4 Dead. Riptide's...
Expansion.
They call it a sequel.
It's an expansion.
Okay.
It's a good expansion, mind you. I'm not knocking it for that. I'm just saying it's not a sequel.
So anyway,
there will be a Dead Island 2.
So,
I'm pretty sure they announced it.
So I was having a lot of fun with that, and I really love the assassination missions. Those are probably my favorite, because they give you, like, a target, and then they give you... You have to go to a very specific location and, like, either acquire a vehicle or, like... One of them was you have to find a fat, ugly hoe in this one area, and you have to.
Can we say that on the air? I don't know. If we
I don't know. I mean, that was the term they used. So that was the string literal, and you have to like put her in like a stranglehold until her pimp shows up, and then you have to kill him. And it's not really that hard. Like that's awful. None of them have really been that hard.
It's really awful.
But
that's it's just really genuinely awful.
It's really fun. And the other really fun
thing you're a sick man
is that I in the DLC you get like all these really cool planes.
You're a sick man.
So I just and they come with lasers. So then I just attack people and
speaking of Saints Row, did you see the new the Saints Row the fourth or what are they called?
Saints Row 4.
Saints Row 4. Have you seen the, like, super rare limited edition?
Yeah, that comes with
a
dub-dub?
No, there's a rarer edition than that. That comes with a display case for your game box.
Really?
It's like a rotating lighted display case. I really want one. I don't think I can afford one, but yeah, I really want one.
But, I really like the Saints Row. I really like Saints Row the Third.
You didn't play Saints Row.
I didn't play any of the
other ones. Or Saints Row 1.
No. Like I'm going to probably get Saints Row 2 in that bundle because I'm really interested in it. But I love Saints Row the Third.
Saints Row 2 is not as good as Saints Row 3.
But oh my god, I like it a lot more than GTA currently. Because I mean, I like GTA for
once
the
GTA
story,
5 comes
but
out.
GTA doesn't embrace itself. Sometimes I feel like
it's a different kind of
open world. They're a lot more mature about it.
Saints
Volition.
Row 5,
Volition well. With Saints Row the Third was just like, you know what? Fuck it, and it worked.
You say that on the air? Gets worse than
you know what? Brr! There, I fixed it. So
okay, we'll go and edit this later.
Okay, I played a little bit more of Shin Megami Tensei 4 over one of my lunch breaks, and
before you realize that game is too hard,
so hard,
it's too hard for you.
And no, it's not too hard for me. It's just like you get. It's like, oh, I'm finally getting comfortable in, like, the first two levels of this dungeon. I mean, I have to win on my first turn or I die, but I'm finally getting comfortable here. And then, I'm on this new mission, and I have to go into the third level of the dungeon. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go save this guy. Enter, my entire party dies. And I'm just like, you know, maybe I need to grind a little more. So, it's gonna be I have a feeling this is gonna be one of those games that I play for the next 3 years and finally beat. And
I should let you play Ninja Gaiden 2. You would like that game.
Yeah, I mean, I like difficult games. Difficult JRPGs are just, they're very weird to me because JRPGs usually aren't that difficult. They're just grindy. But this is genuinely difficult and, like, it's a little frustrating. But at the same time, you don't feel like it's the game's fault. It makes it feel like it's your fault. So, I don't know. It's a lot harder than Persona. And I was expecting Persona. And then I read online, and everyone was like, yeah, this game's hard. And then there's some people who are just like, oh, no, people think this is hard. This is so easy.
Like, you should let me play it. Maybe it's really easy.
It might be. Maybe I'm playing it wrong. I figure I was playing it a little bit wrong. Like, if you don't play with a full demon party, screwed.
No one knows what that means, but
I also played like Animal Crossing New Leaf one day, but like all of our friends
one day
everyone has stopped playing, so the Animal Crossing fad's over.
Yeah, that was quick too. I don't even know why I bought it. I know why I bought it, but
it was, I mean,
I might say
I had a lot of fun with it. I might go back to it eventually, but I don't think it captured me like Wild World did.
I'm just not in a place where I can play it. Really.
I think the main thing with me is that with Wild World, it felt like the slope of progression for like buying a house was a lot more like not as it didn't take as long. While in New Leaf, it feels a little ridiculous. But there's a lot more to do in your town.
I'm just not in high school anymore, so apparently New Leaf doesn't. I don't have time for it in my schedule, unfortunately.
Yeah. Tell me about it. So, tonight I think I'm going to be playing the new BioShock Infinite DLC.
Oh, yeah.
Clash
of
the Clouds, which I'm excited about, because I got the season pass when it came out. And they finally,
before they announced before that they announced there the was going to be anything in the DLC.
But I really like the new Rapture in the Sea, or whatever the hell they're calling it. Barely Let Sea, that's it. Looks really, really cool. So, I'm pretty excited because it sounds like Irrational is doing really, really cool stuff with the BioShock Infinite DLC. Because I was reading this one interview with Ken Levine, and they're doing almost all the assets from scratch, and the trailer that they showed off was totally faked. Like, they don't have it almost, they don't have that much done at all, he said, and like, they were just using a bunch of 2D backgrounds to simulate a lot of the stuff, and he was like, we've got a lot of work to do, but it's gonna be really cool. And he said the entire reason behind Clash in the Clouds and how it's so mechanics driven is so they could get the engineers and artists more on the Burial at Sea, because they need them there. I said what?
You said moron.
I said Burial at Sea.
Yeah, you said moron.
Okay.
You all hear it when you listen to this.
I will hear it. I do listen to these.
Yeah, you'll hear it.
You
have to let me know how that is. I'm not going to play it because I don't have the season pass. And I'm going to go see Pacific Rim again, so. Gotta get your
third time,
straight.
Which my...
Third time is a charm.
My figurine's coming soon.
I'm going to steal them. Okay. You can keep Knifehead. I'm taking the Gypsy Danger to work.
I really liked Tales from Year Zero.
It was good, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's worth buying.
It was very much like... It was very vignette.
It was.
Which I liked.
It was cool.
It
was a good... Tales from Year Zero is the...
Pacific Rim prequel graphic novel.
Yes, that.
That's written by the writers of Pacific Rim.
Yeah, the guy who like wrote the screenplay of Pacific Rim also wrote the graphic novel,
mm-hmm.
which I think was really positive because you can tell it's the same guy, like, which is cool because a lot of times if you do a graphic novel around something, which a lot of things are doing lately, like, it doesn't fit as well, but...
Mm-hmm. But this fit really well.
Yeah, it's like how... You probably don't even know this, but, when, you know that, like, that novelizations of Halo that exist? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole bunch of them now, like, a huge series?
Yeah.
Well, one of them was written by Joseph Staten, the guy who wrote the Halo games.
Right.
And the one that he wrote is one of my favorites. Like, it's really good. Like, it's really, really, really good.
Because he knows the
world
and the universe, and he has the stories in his head.
Yeah. So it was really good.
I mean, that's what the guy was talking about on the foreword to the graphic novel, even, is that when they were making Pacific Rim, they had... They were very detail-oriented. They had stories and about everything that they didn't even include. And
it's
I
like
think,
making a game.
Yeah, or writing a novel, really.
Or writing a novel.
I mean, something that J.R.R. Tolkien said, which a lot of other authors have said, is... if you explored every mountain, you'd have to come up with 10 more mountains to make the world seem just as big.
Yep. So what's great about game design and movie design and novelizations is
mm-hmm.
that part. That's the fun part.
Yeah, one of the things I really hope for is that they go into they do something else with Pacific Rim in terms of
like make a sequel.
Like a sequel would be pretty cool.
So go see that movie, because it's being beaten by Despicable Me 2.
Also,
and I'm not saying that movie is not good, but giant robots fighting... Giant mechs, not robots. I found that out. Can't call them robots. That's offensive,
apparently. I knew that.
I didn't make
they're
that
mechs.
Connection. Yeah, they are. I didn't know that, though. I thought that was
because
cool.
Because they're not autonomous.
Yes, I like that. Anyway, giant mechs fighting giant monsters is... You want more of that. You don't... I mean, minions are they're cool, but...
Minions are really cool. Now, if they combine the two series, that would be probably the best thing ever.
If the Jaegers were fighting giant minions,
If the minions were piloting the Jaegers,
that would be.
Jaegers are the name of the mechs in Pacific Rim, by the way.
We should stop talking about Pacific Rim. Otherwise, we will literally only talk about Pacific
Go
Rim.
Go see that movie.
Do it, seriously.
If you ever wanted the Western version of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Boom. There you go.
Boom. I need to watch that, though.
So, do we want to talk about...
Is it time? Are we going to talk about Phil Fish now?
Actually, I want to talk about something else first.
Oh, okay. Oh. Phil Fish will have to wait.
We had a meeting yesterday with...
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah.
With Mr. Dunham.
Mr. Dunham. Mr. Chris Dunham.
From Dunham Gaming.
DunhamGaming.com.
He approached us after our second podcast, which was our first one.
First in number, not in existence.
And he wants us and asked us to kind of affiliate with his site and he would host our podcast, and in return, we would basically, thank him for hosting us. It was really nice of him to reach out to us, and he sounds like a great guy. His site's really neat. You should check it out. DunhamGaming.com.
Yeah, he's got a cool site. There's several other podcasts there. They're being syndicated. Out.
Yeah.
He's got reviews, articles, the whole nine yards. You know, it's the full package.
Yeah, and he also does game streaming, which is really neat. So you should check that out too. And I'll include a link to the website in the podcast description.
Hopefully we'll be up there soon.
Mm-hmm. Currently we're on Podomatic. We're probably going to be on Podomatic for the next few shows. But we're going to be on Dunham Gaming
soon.
And we're going to have a logo, which is... I don't know what we're going to do once we have a logo.
Make t-shirts and sell them. Obviously.
And plushies. If you want a Dustin plushie, I'll start a Kickstarter.
I want a Dustin plushie, and I'm Dustin. So, that should tell you something right there.
Oh, I'm a producer. Get out of my way.
Dude, the talking ones are really expensive. Really expensive.
Maybe we'll just get one that
prohibitively expensive.
Maybe we'll just get like one that like looks like how you do now, except you can change out the your little Resident Evil thing. You can swap that. You can get like an N7 edition or an Umbrella edition.
You're just making fun of my two favorite shirts.
Yeah,
that's thank you. That's good.
Yeah, and my plushie would
Luffy hat.
you can buy an additional Luffy hat for $5.
God, we're geniuses.
We're going to market the hell out of ourselves.
So keep your eyes out for that, too.
Angry Birds Players Endeavors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need an app.
We need a podcast app.
That's just our podcast. And then we'll take out iTunes. It's a good plan. All right, anyway, moving on.
Now, let's talk about Philip the Fish.
Philip the Fish? That's awful. Why would you call him?
I don't even know.
The poor guy has been through enough, hasn't he? Hasn't he been through enough?
Yeah, his birth name might also be Phil. I don't know. I'm not a...
poor Phil Fish.
I don't know much about Canadians.
Let's recap Phil Fish. Poor guy.
Why don't you tell us what happened to the martyr?
The esteemed Phil Fish. The martyr. See, this is what happened to Phil Fish. People like you...
I was being kind of serious. He kind of... I mean... With what we're about to talk about, he almost was the, what's the right word?
That isn't martyr?
Bleeding lamb.
Bleeding heart?
No, like, you know, wasn't Jesus, like, the bleeding lamb? Isn't that a...
He was called the lamb, yeah. Okay. What about bleeding lamb?
Oh.
I think you're just making stuff up. Probably. Why are you comparing Phil Fish to Jesus, anyway?
Theology on Tuesdays.
He's not... unless he resurrects. Oh, God, we have to make this comparison. Anyway... So Phil Fish, right? You've probably all heard. It was all over the place. In fact, the man was trending on Twitter. Phil Fish was a trending topic on Twitter the night this all went down.
Too bad that was his first time trending.
And probably his last, unless he changes things. But Phil Fish got into a bit of a heated argument with some news sources.
Let me find out. I mean, it was from Game Trailers. Let me find out the guy's name.
Yeah, there was... He had a weird name. It was a very... strange name, but
John Smith or something.
Yeah, it was clearly it was John Smith. Yeah, but this guy was I don't know, he was kind of railing on indie games in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was ragging on like indie games as a movement pretty hard. I don't really know why. You might know more than I do, but he was really just tearing indie games.
And the main people he was attacking were Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow.
Yeah.
Which, if you're gonna attack anyone...
But it was like, he was just going at them, and Phil Fish decided to, like, tweet at him and just be like, hey...
Well, that's kind of what... The guy's name is Marcus Beer.
Marcus Beer, that's it.
And he was really trolling Phil Fish, and then he sent him a tweet, and the tweet he sent to Phil Fish was something along the lines of, tell me about the Xbox One. What do you think about it? Why don't you tell me what you think about it? Because he was trying to get this out of Phil Fish, and Phil Fish basically said, I don't want to talk about that, like, right now, I don't have to talk about that, and I think he might have said something like, I'm fine with the platform currently, like, I don't know what you want me to say, And the guy was like, well, fuck you, or something back to Phil Fish. And Phil Fish and him then got into a very heated yelling match.
A really heated
yelling
match.
Like I suppose you would if someone said, fuck you to you. Which resulted in
him... Phil Fish wanted an apology.
Yeah, he wanted an apology.
He was requesting just an apology from this guy, who was treating him pretty rudely. But he clearly didn't get it. And things got way out of hand. Like, ridiculous out of hand. Because, I mean, Phil Fish is pretty, like... He's known for his Twitter rants already. Like, he does get very passionate about things.
And he did tell Marcus Beer... And this was the main thing that people got upset about. Was he told the guy to kill himself. Which...
It's pretty Phil Fish to say,
actually. But, I mean, there was this thing... I forget what it was from. But it was basically like... Oh, it's in 12 Angry Jurors. The one scene...
12 Angry Men, you mean?
12 Angry Men, I'm sorry. There's a play version that's called 12 Angry Jurors that's trying to be gender neutral. And that's the one I actually... That's what I saw before 12 Angry Men. Mm. So I always screwed the name up. And so, in 12 Angry Men, there's the scene where some of the evidence they're trying to use to convict this boy, because it's basically about jurors in a jury room trying to convict a boy of murder... And the case slowly turns from almost everyone thinking he's guilty to everyone thinking he's not guilty. And one of the strongest things that people are saying he's guilty for is that someone heard the boy shout, I'm going to kill you. And they all went, well, how many times do you shout, I'm going to kill you, when you're really angry? But you never mean I'm going to kill you. I think that's something very similar to what happened. Like, I want you to kill yourself. It's such a heat of rage moment type of thing.
And Phil Fish is known for his angry outbursts. Like, mostly because people rag on him all the time. Like, he gets an unusual amount of hatred, it seems. It's very strange. I don't know why exactly. Like, I'm not sure. I personally don't see much of a reason to dislike the guy. I mean, he's a little pompous here and there, but he did make Fez, which is a pretty awesome game, and he knows what he's talking about, at least in terms of what he wants to do. I mean, he doesn't have all the answers, but he's trying, and he's making indie games on his own, you know, doing his own thing, and you know, he's a pretty good example of, like, what you could aspire to be as an indie, you know, someone who's really passionate about what they do, is willing to put pretty much everything out there to make the game you want to make, and then, you know, stand by it to the end, and I think he's done a lot of that stuff really well. I mean,
he has some flaws, obviously.
Oh, he has flaws.
And I mean, they're very apparent. If you watched Indie Games the Movie, which I think is... I personally think Indie Games the Movie is very overdramatic, but I do think that a lot... I mean, the legal stuff that he had with his partner is obviously real, and the fact that his game took 5 years to develop, and that he was originally being funded by the Canadian government, but he couldn't deliver on any of his goals. Microsoft extended his, like, release schedule, like, a ton of times. And all that's true, and none of that's necessarily good. But, I mean, Fez did turn out to be a pretty cool, different, and interesting game. I think...
You can see the love he put into it.
And you can see the originality in it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's clearly a work of, like, inspiration and love. I mean, he really put himself into that, like, which is great to see. I mean, you know, like... Throwing yourself at a game and believing in it so much to get it done, like, that's awesome. Even if there are so many snags along the way, I mean, you know, he finished it. It came out, and it was actually really pretty good. But after this really really heated exchange, with neither side really trying to both sides refusing to back down, Phil Fish seemed to snap.
He was also getting trolled. Well, during that time, he got a lot of tweets from people, I think him telling him to kill himself, and telling him that...
Oh, yeah, I mean, blew up
and
all over.
And so he basically, he put his Twitter account on protected so no one else could add him or anything, and he really secluded himself because, I mean, he was getting hate mail, essentially, from tons of people, and it really blew up way out of proportion, really fast.
Oh, yeah.
But he's put up with this stuff for a while, is what is something, and like... And he can't really stand the hatred anymore, is what it made it sound like.
After he put his Twitter account on as frozen as he could, and calmed down a bit, he kind of out of the blue just posted Fez is canceled. Fez 2 is canceled. Mm-hmm. Like, he put up a tweet and then a post on his company's website said, Fez 2 is canceled. I'm taking the money and running. You guys win. I'm out of here. Pretty much. Like, that was
and pretty much exactly what he said. Too, is what he's saying.
Yeah, he said, I'm done with games. I'm tired of this. This is not fun anymore. Like, this isn't worth doing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is really what he said. And that's pretty much it. Like, there may have been more information that's broken, but as far as I know, that's all that anyone's heard.
No, that's the last.
Like, he has pretty much dropped off of social media. I mean, he hasn't posted anything new on his website as of a couple days ago when I checked last. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it sounds like Phil Fish has officially stopped development on his next game and is leaving the games industry currently, which is kind of huge. I mean, that really says something when you have a person who's so passionate about their game that they're willing to put like 5 years of their life into it, go through like a ton of financial loss, like to the point of not having any money at all, like go through legal battles, like personal hardships and all that, and like still keep it together enough to finish your game and get it out there and be proud of it. And then you just are like, you know, this is too much. I'm done. Like, that's huge, in my opinion. Like,
mm-hmm.
That really says a lot about how much crap he was getting.
And, I mean, I think we'll get more on what that says about the fans and the press in a second. But the one really cool thing that came out of this is Cliff Bleszinski's open letter.
Oh, that was great. Cliff Bleszinski on his blog posted this really, really nice letter. I mean, Cliffy B is known for his crazy antics and
rashness.
Stuff, but you guys should all check out his blog. I think it's called what is that? Dude Huge Speaks.
Tumblr.com.
He's, I don't know. I really love his blog. Like, it's the most honest I've ever seen him. He just really does a lot of great like brain dump stuff. Like, he really just talks about what's on his mind, and he's very much like, it seems to me at least, like really low bullshit. Like, I've been really impressed by what he's done in terms of his blog, and that open letter to Phil Fish was really great. Like, he touched on so many points about the types of things that we also agree with, that like, it's really terrible that a prolific game developer has had to leave, not because they want to and not because of, you know, some strange, you know, reason. It's because literally the community came together to destroy him, which is awful. Like, that's a terrible thing. That's awful. Like, that really bothers me a little bit, that like, we can be so hurtful to people who are in this just like we all are. I mean, you can't have gamers without game developers.
And this has been more and more prevalent lately.
Oh, it's all over the place. I mean from the Mass Effect 3 debacle.
That's what I was about to say, the Mass Effect 3 stuff, the Xbox One explosion.
The Xbox One explosion, like,
the Sony having to take their online service down because of the hackings way back when, and the big, big public outcry from that. There's a lot of general intolerance from gamers as a whole towards when something that they don't particularly like or don't particularly agree with, and it's very self-entitled.
It's an odd phenomenon in our industry and our collective like organization of those who play games. Like, it's so weird that like the people who you would think would be the most accepting, because, you know, at least traditionally they were, you know, liking games was not the cool thing. It's definitely changing now, but like, for a long time, you know, we all had to deal with the exact sort of thing that's now happening within our own tight-knit group. I mean, you know, it's just like the bullies taking the kids' lunch money with Phil Fish. I mean,
I'm sure a lot of it's just the people who are being loudest are the ones who are being heard, but...
Oh, certainly.
It's still ridiculous, and I think...
That shouldn't happen, though. We shouldn't have game developers have to leave because of bullying.
I think a lot of it has to do with the press, honestly. I mean, Kotaku often sensationalizes stories to an extreme, and they... In their article, they're very, very, very biased towards one point or the other, and they were very angry and very much pushed the how horrible the Xbox One thing was, and I think that when...
So this podcast is never going to be on Kotaku, which is...
Well,
Just so you know, now that that's been said.
I think that...
We're all about honesty here, folks, so... We don't have any allegiances to anybody, so... Except, you're only going to hear what we care about.
I just think that when you're a news site... And, I mean, I understand Kotaku is... They do editorials, and they're an opinionated site. But when you're a news site, and you are in the public image as much as you are, you have a lot of... I think you almost have a ethical duty to... present news as neutral and let your readers come to a point of view, because there's a very fine line, or there's a line between entertainment and news.
There is. Oh, and there's also like so much news out there that mm-hmm. we can. I think it's reasonable to allow our audiences to do cross-checking and look across the vast spectrum of news that's out there to take what they will from news sources, and not, like, they shouldn't need to have to, like, fact-check everything and check out what the bias is on
something. I always do that now. I always
have to.
I always have to go to the sources.
And how do you know what's true?
Oh, this is really what they're saying. There's a lot of false reporting going on. Like, for instance, I'm gonna rag on Kotaku a little more.
Just to ensure that we're never up there, he's going to rag on Kotaku a little more.
They recently have been talking about how... And they really, like, pour salt in the wound, because they published an article early in the day. Because the one nice thing about Kotaku is that they're a very good aggregate of...
The one nice thing.
Of all the different things. Like, their headline... Looking through the headlines is nice, because you get to see, oh, these are, like, the big features of the day. As long as you don't try to read their editorials. But, They talked about how the Wii U is doing abysmal, it's super underselling, and then the article above it's like, oh, Nintendo's upping their profit margin from last year, and the 3DS is doing amazing, but then article after article is focusing on, oh, the Wii U's underselling, the Wii U's doing abysmal, all this shit, when the year before, all they were talking about was, oh, the 3DS is underselling, it's doing abysmal. How is a portable handheld supposed to compete in the new mobile market? And now it's, how can the Wii U compete in this next-gen market? And it's really, really, really silly to me that we're even having these discussions. I think people either have forgotten or simply, like, don't think into the future about how companies traditionally release consoles. And then...
They do, in fact, release
consoles. And then developers make some games from that launch. They have special deals. And then the developers can actually develop more for the consoles. And then over the next year or two, it ramps up a bit. And then you can do a steady stream of game releases. For the Wii U, there's just been a... I mean, there's been a lot of lulls. Like, I mean...
Laugh out louds, for those of you who aren't in the know.
Yeah, laugh out louds. No, like, a lot of... there hasn't been a ton of games. And I mean, I'll admit, like, the Wii U isn't selling as great as it could be, and there has been not the biggest offering of games, but I think it's been made very, very clear that there's a lot to come this year, and I think that the sales aren't that abysmal. I mean, Nintendo still managed to make profit.
They always make profit.
Not last year.
Oh, they didn't last year.
Yeah, they lost a lot. Iwata actually took a salary cut.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot that.
Yeah, because...
Oh, I'm sure it's just manufacturing costs. I mean, releasing a new console, you have to ramp up for that, and that's a huge hit.
Well, I think another thing is that it seemed a lot more drastic than it was, because it was right after the Wii sales really stopped, and Wii sales were huge. I mean, nothing has still outsold the Wii.
In terms of consoles?
Mm-hmm.
Including portables?
DS has sold more than the Wii. DS is the best-selling console. And so they had like a huge percentage like down from the year before. I mean, the really obvious reason is because something that was selling really great is no longer selling because they're ramping up for the next console generation. But people looked at it and were like, oh, what the hell? Anyways, way off topic. But basically what I think we're trying to say is that there's a huge issue where the press and the fans are really affecting developers in a negative way. I think something that's really been in the light recently is there was the study that went on about how Metacritic alters its Metacritic scores based on different factors, and then it came out more that a lot of people at these big studios receive bonuses based on what the game got an aggregate score of on Metacritic.
Oh yeah, a lot of... No, I don't actually know numbers, but like there are definitely known publishers that will tie additional bonuses onto salaries for game creators to the Metacritic score. A lot of times I don't keep saying a lot of times, but in some contracts it's been known to be write that based on, like, literally it will say in the text, like, assuming this game gets a Metacritic score of 80 or higher, X number of additional dividends will be paid. Like, literally it says, like, the Metacritic site will be used as a metric for this.
Which is... it's a really strange coupling of our press and our developers. I mean, there's a lot of stories from IGN way back when, I think, when they were a little bigger, when... they were getting paid off to give higher review scores, and you'd see...
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that started getting leaked out. And it was really noticeable, because I don't remember what game it was, but it, I didn't give it, like, a 9, and everyone else was giving it, like, 6s. And they were like, oh, we just really liked the game, but their ads were all over the site, and it was like...
Oh, I forgot all about that. That's so funny.
And it's not a new problem. I think a lot of the... I think a lot of the being paid off has gone down. I think that review copy is still in the sites that are trying to make it or break it still are still really abused.
They're certainly used as like collateral by mm-hmm. different companies, I'm sure.
When I worked for this one site, I know a lot of people there would give the I know one guy in particular really wanted to keep his position with Nintendo really tight. He now actually works for them as one of their, on-the-site PR reps, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he would give all their games 10s. No matter if they were good or bad, and he would give them all 10s. Because he wanted to make sure that Nintendo kept giving him stuff. And I think there's just something really wrong with the fact that we have... That the press is almost bribed to give dishonest opinions,
And write sensationalist stories to get hits.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, like... But it's been going on forever in the press. I mean, like, from the days of newspaper headlines to now. I mean, it's not a new problem, but it's getting worse still, somehow. Which is not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I don't think we can honestly, fairly say, like, you should make all of your news purely non-biased and just be super right in the middle of the road. But...
We don't do that.
That's becoming
a news podcast.
It's becoming a problem now, where like really bad things are happening, and people are becoming less interested in making games or working on games or doing cool stuff with games because of the climate that we're creating, just consistently. And that's not good. That is a problem. Like when our entire industry starts to get affected by it, we know that there is a problem there. Like we can't. That's not good for anyone involved. I mean, if game developers stop making games, there are no game players anymore. I mean, you can't play games if they don't exist. I don't think that's going to happen, but I mean, we can get better games by making a better climate.
I think it stems from a lack of respect, really. I think it was really apparent with the BioWare fiasco with Mass Effect 3. For those of you that might not have heard of or might not remember, basically...
Impossible!
It's impossible. Mass Effect 3 had an ending that...
It had an ending!
Some fans did not agree with, because BioWare had, probably through like a marketing division, had promised that...
I don't think they ever... Well, there was a quote by Casey, the Casey guy, that said, like, your choices will matter really, really crazily.
Yeah.
In an interview. Like, it wasn't, like, on the back of the box or anything. I mean, it was just, like, it was a spoken word thing, you know, I mean...
And so people were really upset by the ending, just because they weren't satisfied with, like,
they didn't feel as though their choices had become, like, paramount in the final decision of the game, essentially, is what it boiled down to.
Which, from a technical perspective, it's really...
It would have been impossible.
It would have been impossible.
The amount of, like... The fact that they made it, that there were so many arcing quest lines that could branch over and create unique stories that they had is a phenomenal achievement.
You really have to appreciate the journey of Mass Effect more than any other game.
Yeah, exactly.
Except maybe Journey, but...
It was clever. It was a good pun. Good work.
But no, you really do. And so, but anyways, people got really upset. And BioWare ended up releasing... I still haven't played it.
I haven't either.
They released a director's cut of the ending, essentially, where they...
Except it wasn't a... It was like a reverse director's cut. It was like a... If the, it was like a... The director's not here anymore. Here's what the fans are requesting cuts.
But it was... I mean, they didn't really fix the problem. I think they gave a few more options, maybe. I mean, they did what they could to respond to it. But I thought it was awful in the first place that the fans would... outraged so much out of the creator's decision to handle something a certain way. I mean, I think there is a time and place for fans to be outraged about something. I mean, I personally would be a little upset about the Street Fighter 4 stuff that goes on, where every other year they release a new version of Street Fighter 4 with, like, two new characters. And you have to go buy the new version if you want to be competitive in the tournament. And they know that they're manipulating their audience and getting them to buy the new version every year so they can...
But that's like that's like a malicious thing. Like,
yeah.
That's easy to get upset about
that. And you're allowed to get upset about that because it is partially malicious. But when it's something like... I don't think Mass Effect 3 in its core game was being malicious. There was some stuff around it that you could argue with, like, oh, they were packing in DLC with shoes. That's really weird. Oh, they were just trying to get completionists to buy all these tertiary products. And sure, maybe you can make an argument for that, but the core game wasn't trying to be malicious.
That, and I mean, I think that the key point is that it's completely acceptable to be passionate about something and want to have your opinion heard. Like, if you are responsible and about how you share your opinion, you know, go to the developers' forums, contact the developers through their channels, and... You know, interact with them on Twitter, on Facebook, and stuff. Let them know how you feel about things.
Feedback is helpful.
Oh, yeah. Like, devs love feedback. And, like, letting people know in a like, I don't want to say, like, a kind and gentle way, but, like, in a mature, like, let's have a discussion, exactly, a constructive way. Like, let's have a discussion about this. Instead of just, like, flame-warring people and making a big ruckus.
OMG, WTF did you do that? Worst ending ever. 2 out of 5.
Yeah, that doesn't...
That's not constructive.
That doesn't help us at all. That just lets us know that you weren't happy, but it doesn't tell us anything more than that. And it doesn't make us want to fix it. It just makes us want to be like, okay, fine. We don't care about your opinion. Because your opinion is just, we did bad.
If we ever got that, like, if we ever got, like, an outcry from a bunch of people about, like, oh my god, you can't believe we did it, but no one gave us anything constructive back, I would just release a patch that did nothing. And be like, oh, we fixed some of your issues in our newest patch.
Yeah, it's like, it's a very fine line between, you know, being constructive and being, and like, just yelling and having, trying to have your voice be louder than everyone else. And it's something we all need to learn together. I mean, as an interconnected community across more channels than we've ever had access to before, you know, I mean, I think it's...
We're the largest entertainment industry.
Yeah.
In terms of, money.
In terms of money.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's
great.
That's the professional opinion.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. I think that it's important for developers, to listen to their fans and, you know, take their thoughts into consideration. But at the end of the day, the developers are the ones who are putting their time and their energy and
their
passion.
Heart and soul, yeah.
Into this product, and you know, it really hurts when people just tear things down with no reasoning, no thought, just, you know, just literally tearing things down because they didn't feel that their exact thing that they wanted to have happen was met. Like, devs want to make their game fans happy. Like, that's why we do this, is so to, like, you know, make games
Randy,
make people enjoy them.
Randy
know?
Pitchford, the head of
Gearbox
said it the best, is that game developers are really weird people. We like torturing ourselves a bit in order to be able to make a large group of other people happy.
Yeah, like, that's what it comes down to, is like, we want to make stuff at the end of the day that is the best thing it can be for what we wanted to make and for our fans to enjoy. And, you know, that I think that almost anybody who's in this industry will tell you that, like, We don't do this just to do this. Like, you don't really go into games because it's, like, something to do. Like, you go into it for that reason, because that's what you want to do. And I wish more game players knew and understood that, and like you know, this is a labor of love all of the time. You know, like it's an industry that you go into because you want to make a difference and you want people to enjoy what you do. So
that's
at the forefront of everything almost.
Which is probably why developers get taken advantage of a lot, is because they care so much about their product and they wanna do so well that when someone is upset or someone wants to be able to take advantage of them, I think a lot like with the EA stuff, there wasn't a lot of fighting back. It was like, well, we want to get this game out. We want to please the fans. We want to go forward with this. And so it's such a labor of love.
And there are exceptions, of course. I mean
a lot of the indie game industry, the more definitely like independent than artsy side, like independent corporation, is really about how can we monetize this new mobile game idea that we have. It's not very original. It's not very like anything. It's just how can we monetize this? And I mean, I would say that a lot of times that's not necessarily it's not a labor of love for.
I mean, there are exceptions to this in all of the places. I mean, but like, that's not the standard. Like,
no,
that's not.
Fez wasn't made because Phil Fish was trying to make a cash cow.
Exactly. Like I mean, it's all about, you know, those sort of people. Like, the people that are just in it for the money are few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually don't stay in the industry very long.
No. Because the money is risky.
Exactly. But, I don't know, I guess that's what we kind of wanted to bring up, was that, you know, we don't know what the answers are. But
you might hate the guy, but you have to understand that he probably, I think he probably cares about Fez more than he cares about himself.
That's certainly possibly true, and it's sad to see that a bunch of people who were just trying to make a big deal out of nothing could cause something so terrible to happen. Like, I don't know. I think that speaks volumes of just, like, the state we're in right now, and that we need to fix it. Like, we need to start changing the way
we need to be more mature
things.
As an industry. We really do. I mean,
I mean, as an industry and as a populace of gamers, mm-hmm. I mean,
we've evolved
together.
A lot, I think, from the somewhat true stereotype of the basement nerd.
Oh, sure.
Or the media, the press and the office were very immature and looked at porn all day. I think that we're being a lot more professional of an industry, but I think we're far from being at the point of something like, I don't know, film that's more established.
And we also need to make sure we don't, you know, become the thing that we wanted to avoid. I mean, becoming a bully in the gaming world is still being a bully. I mean, it's no better than being a bully anywhere else. I mean, you're still being the same type of malicious person, even though you're, you know, in a different space. And that's, you know, we don't want that. Like,
anonymity
does not
exclude people from moral integrity.
Yes. And people can get hurt. I mean, and, you know, just because you're behind a screen name of some kind doesn't mean that the other person on the other end of their screen name isn't there either.
And the NSA is watching.
And the NSA is always watching, kids. Watch out for that one. Never know. Dude, people do go to jail for that. Cyberbullying is becoming a known thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the record of you saying stuff lasts forever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. You don't know. There are sites that just take snapshots of probably the database of Facebook or whatever. Facebook probably has so. There's no way that all their data is secure, or they don't have copies that people have taken home and lost, and someone else has found. And I mean, all this, you never, anything you ever put on the web, and I mean, my mom always tells my sister this: anything you ever put out on the web, if you delete that later, it's not gone.
Nope,
it's not.
And people will use it to reference you, like this Beers guy. Everything he said is now his Google search that
mm-hmm.
comes up. That guy who blew up over the controllers at Microholic. Ruined. His name, if you Google his name, all you'll get is everything about him.
And if you Google Dick Cheney, all you ever see is he shot a guy, so.
Exactly. And so.
It's the little things that you do when you're.
Hunting?
Hunting or not paying attention.
Or are paying attention.
Or are paying attention and are just blind and old. That get you in trouble.
Your name is actually more valuable than it's ever been before, it
mm-hmm.
would seem. I mean, your name is. you know, your name and your internet search is worth infinite amounts of money.
And now with Google Glass, I can look at you and, I can look at you and know everything about you, so.
Well, not yet, we don't have those.
Be wary of the future.
Anybody wants to send us Google Glass, send us a message, we'll get that worked out. Love to mess around with it. That seems awesome.
Even just borrow. We'll take a borrow.
Yeah, well, you can send them and we'll send them back. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, whatever works.
We'll sign them.
Sign them? Yeah.
Free of charge.
Free of charge. Right across the lenses. That way you know that it was us.
All right. So I think that's it for this episode.
I think that's it, guys.
Thanks again to Dunham Gaming.
Thanks again to Dunham Gaming. And good luck to Phil Fish. I mean, God bless the guy. I hope he comes back. Like, he's never going to listen to this podcast. But man, Phil, if you ever do hear this, come back. Like, seriously. This industry is too cool for you to leave.
And
just yet.
We need more people who are being creative and
willing to put themselves out there for something new.
Yeah.
Like, no, seriously. Come back, Phil. Miss you.
Thanks for listening.
Yep.